Peter B. Collins with news and comment here on Monday, February 13. And the tabloid experts in the corporate media are doing backflips over the untimely and tragic death of Whitney Houston right before the Grammys. That's all I've got to say about it. But the Holy Rollers are still in high gear over the Obama administration's efforts to provide contraceptive coverage to all women in America. And this continues to be a fully political operation where the Catholic bishops are in collusion with Rick Santorum and other forces of repression and just actual retrograde thinking in this country. And the Catholic bishops are raising a fuss and a furor, claiming that this is a matter of conscience. And they're asking the government to do what they are unable to do. They can't persuade members of their own congregation, the Catholic Church, to honor the church's teachings about contraception. Why? Because they don't make any damn sense. Sensible people, even those who are practicing Catholics who embrace much of the other rules, regulations, and beliefs that the church dictates, don't agree with their own leaders on this. And so raising a phony issue because the Catholics have already come to terms with this in at least 18 states and as many as 28, where their businesses like churches and hospitals and universities do already provide contraceptive coverage to either women who work there or the wives of husbands who are covered under plans paid for by Catholic entities. And this is a completely concocted controversy. How do I know? Well, I spent about 20 minutes today listening to Sean Hannity. And Hannity keeps driving the conflation of contraceptives, the morning after pill, and abortion services. You'll hear that from Rick Santorum, too. They wrap them up all into one phrase. And first of all, contraception doesn't have anything to do with abortion. Secondly, the morning after pill is not an abortion pill. But that's what the right-wing and the ultra-uber-Christians claim, even though it's not factual. And as we watch this, I was disappointed to see Obama genuflect to the Catholic bishops, and then the bishops rejected his compromise. And it is a set of empty issues that we probably will have to hear about for some time to come, because the Republicans are intent on whipping up their base, pandering to people who are either ignorant or in some sort of religious-driven denial about these issues. Breaking news at this hour, and I'm speaking to you at about 5 o'clock Pacific time here on Monday the 13th. And in Bahrain, a group of activists, including some American citizens, are trying to draw attention to the one-year anniversary of the uprising in Bahrain. And I have a report that was just emailed to me from Medea Benjamin, the courageous co-founder of Code Pink for Peace and also the co-founder of Global Exchange based here in San Francisco. And she is in Bahrain, and I am going to read you verbatim some of the comments in this email. She says, "Tens of thousands of people flooded the main Budaya Road. First there were men, mostly young, then came the women. They were shouting defiant chants like, 'We won't obey your orders, we will break the chains.' They were calling on the Prime Minister to step down, shouting, 40 years is enough." Medea says, "My favorite sign was one contrasting the U.S. views toward Syria and Bahrain. On one side was Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton above gruesome Syrian bodies, chastising Assad. On the other side was Obama and Clinton above gruesome Bahraini bodies, remaining silent. The Bahrainis want to know why the U.S. has such double standards. Not only is the U.S. government going ahead with multi-million-dollar arms sales to Bahrain, but the tear gas that was about to envelop us came from the good old USA. About 20 minutes after the march began, the group at the front arrived at the Al-Qadam roundabout. They were supposed to continue straight, but some decided to veer off to the right to try to reach the coveted destination, the Pearl Roundabout. And you may recall the Pearl Roundabout was like Egypt's Tahrir Square, where Bahraini protesters had camped out for about a month before they were brutally evicted by the police. The men, trying to protect women from any police repression, set up a blockade to push the women toward the permitted march route. Meanwhile, thousands of young men started sprinting toward the Pearl Roundabout. Although the protest was totally peaceful, the police, most of whom are not Bahraini and many of whom don't even speak Arabic, responded with an overwhelming barrage of tear gas as well as birdshot and rubber bullets. "We all began choking," Medea Benjamin continues, "struggling to breathe, our eyes on fire. I had put on my gas mask, but it did nothing to stop my eyes from burning. It was so bad I had to close them and walk, stumbling along blindly. Luckily, one of our local friends, Mohammed, grabbed my hand and pulled me to the side. A person with a carload of passengers saw us. He pulled the car off the road and the passengers jumped out to make room for me. Ty Berry, Mohammed, and two other Americans in our group. A perfect stranger, this driver took terrific care of us and thanked us for bearing witness to their struggle." Also, an American citizen named Huwaida Araf was brutally deported from Bahrain over the last 24 hours. She was arrested on Saturday during a peaceful protest near the Chartered Bank, the Standard Chartered Bank, in downtown Manama. Protesters had marched there, and she was detained by the authorities, roughed up, put on an airliner for Britain, and her hands were handcuffed behind her back on the entire flight to Britain. They took the handcuffs off in London and deported her to the United States. And I'm proud to know people like Medea Benjamin and others who are standing up and really showing the double standard of the Obama administration, as Benjamin pointed out in her commentary. Iran appears to be using tactics embraced by Israel or the United States against Israel. In a strike virtually identical to attacks on Iranian nuclear scientists, a passing motorcyclist attached what appeared to be a shaped charge, a bomb, to an Israeli diplomatic vehicle in New Delhi, India. The driver and the wife of Israel's deputy defense ministry representative to India were wounded, as were two people in a nearby car. Now, I don't condone violence of any sort, but Iran has been subject to these attacks rather dramatic in Tehran and other parts of Iran that either were conducted by the U.S. CIA or the Mossad or some sort of a joint operation, because Iranian nuclear scientists have been targeted and they use this same routine where a motorcycle comes alongside the car, uses a magnetic bomb, and then detonates it before the victims have a chance to react. And as I said, I don't condone the violence, but you can see that Iran is turning the tables here and that Israel cannot continue to mess with the Iranians with impunity. And it just sets the stage once again for my concern that we could see a very serious miscalculation that leads to a very hot war in the Middle East this year. And I'd like to be wrong about that. But at this point, we have to be very concerned that our incredible lockstep support of Israel could blow back on us in a major way. Last week, I shared with you the discouraging news of a poll that showed that most Americans, including a majority of people who self-identify as liberal Democrats, support the use of unmanned aerial drones even when they're used to kill an American citizen. And over the weekend, related to the killing of Anwar al-Awlaki in Yemen, we did learn more about the confession of Abdul Muttalib, who is the so-called underwear bomber whose underwear didn't explode on the airliner headed for Detroit when he attempted to detonate. And the reports, of course, are all we have to trust our government, that this is what Abdul Muttalib said and that it's not being spun. But with those caveats, what they told us is that Abdul Muttalib made a trip to Yemen where he went to great lengths to look up Anwar al-Awlaki. And in the confession, Abdul Muttalib claims that Awlaki instructed him, you know, introduced him to the guy who created the bomb in his underwear. and basically encouraged him to become a jihadist. Now, if this is true, it does offer significant support for the Obama administration's decision to kill Alaki. But it doesn't justify it, and it doesn't make it legal or constitutional. And that's my big problem, that Obama feels no need to offer a judicial process that would have convicted al-Awlaki in absentia based on the testimony of Abdul-Muttalib. And I'd be much more comfortable with this kind of extrajudicial killing if there were at least some process in place. And speaking of drones, the dangerous left-wing magazine called Forbes has published online 10 fun facts about drones. And this article doesn't really take a critical stance. I mean, after all, it's Forbes magazine, capitalist tool, establishment, right wing. But considering the source, I invite you to go to Forbes.com and do a search for 10 fun facts about drones. For example, there could be 30,000 drones overhead in the U.S. by 2020. That's only 8 years away. Reaper drones have an unblinking stare and can currently take in a 4-kilometer square area. But that'll soon be expanded to 10 by 10 kilometers, meaning that they can fixate on a specific area and keep track of all movements and all of the items in view. There are disagreements about what to call drones, because there is now a caucus for unmanned aerial drones or unmanned aerial vehicles, and Buck McKeon, the Republican congressman, is a proud member of the Unmanned Systems Caucus. And at a recent meeting of that caucus, a woman, a middle-aged woman, rushed the stage saying, "We want spending on education, not war," which drew laughs from the drone industry members in the audience. As she was physically lifted and carried off the stage, she chanted, "Stop killer drones," which drew boos and laughs from the audience. Forbes also reports the Air Force has 65,000 people working to process all the data and footage that it's currently collecting from drones. Cape Canaveral is a drone base. You thought it was just for space missions. And the recent FAA Reauthorization Act calls for 6 drone test sites around the U.S. and sets up a plan to clear airspace for drones. And the Coast Guard thinks that drones will increase their prosecutions by 95%. So they want drones. And boy, this is turning into a whole new drone military industrial complex that is way outside of the standards, protocols, and treaties and conventions that have governed warfare for many years. And boy, is that a slippery slope. Bradley Manning will be arraigned at Fort Meade, Maryland on February 23rd. The court-martial trial is expected to begin in early May, and we will keep you posted on any developments in the Bradley Manning case. Sunday's New York Times had a fascinating and lengthy article that started on page 1 and then went on to 2 or 3 more pages in the interior of the first section. And it focuses on the town of Chisago. It's like Chicago, but the C is turned into an S. And Chisago is actually a county northeast of Minneapolis, which is largely conservative. They vote conservatively, and they have increasingly over the last 20 years. And these are people who remind me of Thomas Frank's book, What's the Matter with Kansas? And I would append that to this and say, what's the matter with Chisago County? Because what they detail here is that people who consider themselves libertarian, independent, anti-government increasingly rely on government benefits. And the Times even publishes a map. And I'll just take a look at California, which shows up as one of the states which puts the least demand on the federal government for payments to individuals. We are seen as less dependent than other red state areas. I'm looking at Arizona. I'm looking at Mitch McConnell's Kentucky. I'm looking at the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. And I'm looking at Chisago County, Minnesota. And I invite you to go to NewYorkTimes.com, NYTimes.com, and take a look at this, because it's a real eye-opener about the disconnect between people's practices and their politics. They say, give me money to help me, as they want to cut federal spending and take it away from other people. And the Times points out that critics of the so-called social safety net in this country are increasingly dependent on it. And my friend Steve Pizzo, who does a daily blog post called News for Real, picked up a column from George Monbiot in the British newspaper The Guardian. And I just want to read part of this to you, because what it really shows is just how stupid conservatives are, or at least some of them. He says, drawing on a sample size of several thousand, correcting for both education and socioeconomic status, a new study looks embarrassingly robust. It shows that prejudice tends not to arise directly from low intelligence, but from the conservative ideologies to which people of low intelligence are drawn. Conservative ideology is the critical pathway from low intelligence to racism. Those with low cognitive abilities are attracted to right-wing ideologies that promote coherence and order and emphasize the maintenance of the status quo. So, I don't want to paint with too broad a brush, but part of the problem we have, including this current battle over contraception, which should be a non-issue, is really because we're dealing with a lot of dumb shits. Can I put it more succinctly? And finally today, I just want to recognize the pain of the people of Greece. Riots broke out on Sunday at the same time that the parliament, which had been, shall we say, trimmed down to remove people who wouldn't vote for the austerity package. Yes, several members of parliament were booted out because they wouldn't support it. Well, the package was rammed through, and Greece has been sentenced to a kind of pain and suffering across the entire population that will leave it damaged and in great pain and struggle for many years to come. And I deplore that, because while, you know, it's a complicated picture, and Greece and Italy and many of these countries have corrupt bureaucracies and ancient guilds and unions that make it difficult to do business, the kind of draconian medicine that has been applied to Greece will probably end up next being applied to Italy, Spain, and Portugal. And someday, we might see it applied right here in the United States. Disaster capitalism, making sure that the world is safe for bankers and wealthy people. Thanks for listening. I'm Peter B.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling.